Path integral derivation of the anomaly is today's topic. And this was a puzzle that was resolved by Fujikawa in 1979. So suppose we have an action that is I psi bar d slash psi. So the fermions have no mass. I have some gauge symmetry. So d mu is equal, capital D mu is equal to partial d plus v mu a mu. If this is QCD, it would be a vector-like theory. And I'll remind you, the fermion rules are, for the gammas, rather, are this, and gamma 5 is the product of four gammas, which in this case I haven't defined with an I. The reason is we're working in Euclidean space, so maybe I'll put that there now. And the trace of gamma 5 with four gammas . So this is all in, is there anything else I want to write down? All in Euclidean space. So have you guys done path integrals at all? Is that? So the idea of a path integral, of course, was a way of understanding quantum mechanics as adding up for a particle all the possible paths it could take between its initial and final destination, each one weighted by e to the I action divided by h bar. In the case of fields, the idea is similar. You have some quantum fields, in this case, the fermions, and you start them in some initial configuration on some hypersurface, let them evolve to some final hypersurface in some configuration, and add up over all the possible evolutions, each one weighted by the exponential of this action divided by h bar. And to actually calculate path integrals, one really needs to go to Euclidean space, which is why I've got that there. It's why there is no I in front of this, for example, and it's why I've got a Kronecker delta instead of the metric. So the effective action for this gauge field will be the integral over these fermions times e to the minus action weighted by h bar, which is psi bar id slash psi. So this is a function of v. This, if I just have a v and I'm not quantizing it, this will give an effective action due to all of the interactions the v field has with these quantum fermions. I could put in an action for V and make it more sophisticated, but this is enough to illustrate the point. So we know we have a chiral symmetry here. The chiral symmetry is given by psi prime is e to the I theta gamma 5 times psi, and I'll make theta depend on x, and psi bar prime is equal to psi bar e to the, when you pull it through twice, you get a dagger, which flips the sign, but you pull it through the bar, the gamma zero in the bar, which flips the sign again, so it's the same thing. And then under this symmetry, s of v prime is the original S. If I just shove this into here, the derivative will act on the psi. And I get psi bar gamma mu gamma 5 psi times d mu theta. And if I gauged this, I haven't gauged this yet, I've got a vector-like symmetry, but if I gauged this, I could make this term go away, but for the purposes of Nutter's theorem, I would just say, well, if I integrate by parts, I've got to have a conserved current. So the point, these don't go up automatically, do they? I have to use muscle, right? Okay, so the variation of the effective action, and I'm sorry, this should say e to the minus gamma of v, my apologies. The derivation of this with respect to v, if I want to extremize this, I have delta delta theta, since this is a symmetry of the integral of d psi bar d psi times e to the minus prime prime s of v prime. But that will be delta delta theta of the integral of d psi bar, that's a bar there in case you can't see it, d psi bar d psi times e to the minus, by this relationship here, s of v, and then minus the integral of psi bar gamma mu gamma 5 psi d mu theta. So this doesn't depend on theta, but this does. So it's equal to the integral of d psi bar d psi times e to the minus s of v times d mu of psi bar gamma mu gamma 5 psi, which is just the expectation value of, or rather I should say d mu of the expectation value of psi bar, yeah.
The first derivative variation,
should that be the theta? Yeah. Sorry, this is theta. What did I do here? V. Theta. My apologies. Thank you. I was concentrating on fixing the gamma V. Where am I here? Times psi. But that's just d mu of the expectation value of j mu 5. And so this created a puzzle that if you ask what the quantum version is of Noether's theorem, it should say J is conserved just the way the classical J is conserved. But of course, the diagrams don't agree with this. So perturbative diagrams don't agree. That's not what we found from the diagrams. It is what we find from maybe I'll put that up about here to keep it even. It is what we find from the path integral, and this puzzled people for quite a while. What's wrong with the path integral formalism? And yeah.
Why don't we get a factor of the Jacobian when we do our transformation for our field?
Sorry,
why don't we get a factor of the Jacobian when we do our factor?
Well, we do. That's what Fujikawa realized.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm gonna do next. But originally people thought, well, why should it? Because this will cancel this, or maybe should cancel this in the Jacobian some way when I take the star, but in fact, you're absolutely right. That is what happens. There's a factor in the Jacobian that makes the difference. And the way that works is as follows. If we take an eigenbasis of the size, we have d slash of phi n is lambda n phi n. So d is some operator acting on the fermion fields, and it will have a set of eigenvectors and eigenvalues. And I don't know how to calculate them necessarily, but I do know that the lambdas are real since d slash is Hermitian. And these should form a complete set of states. in the sense that phi n dagger of x, phi n of y, summed over all the possibilities, should be delta of x minus y, and that the integral of d4x of phi n dagger phi m of x should be delta nm. So I have these completeness and orthogonality relations, or at least I presume they exist. So psi of x should be some combination of these basis fields, and psi bar of x should be some other combination of the daggers of those basis fields, where an and bn are Grassmann variables. Have you guys encountered this for path integrals of fermions, Grassmann variables? So they anti-commute with each other. An anti-commutes with bn because the fermion fields obey anti-commutation relations, and so the path integral has to respect that. So now we have what Fujikawa pointed out is what goes wrong here is this step, because this measure is taken to be the same as that, but it's actually not the same as that. So what is it? Well, d psi bar prime d psi prime is equal to d psi bar d psi times the determinant of some matrix C, where CNM is equal to the integral of d4x of phi n dagger e to the I theta gamma 5 phi m integrated over x and, to the minus 2. So the Jacobians go backwards when you have Grassmann variables. Instead of getting a determinant, you get 1 over a determinant. So you get a determinant from this one, you get a determinant from that one. And so you'll get each factor will give you an e to the I theta gamma 5. So you get 2 of them, 1 from each of these things. And I can use the fact that the ln of the determinant of a matrix is the trace of the ln of the matrix. So I can solve determinant as the exponential of the trace of the ln. And that will give me d psi bar d psi is equal to e to the minus twice I trace the sum over n. Well, I'll get the ln, trace of the ln, sorry. I'll get the trace of the ln of the sum over n of all this stuff. But this actually works out to be psi bar psi. I can expand the ln because these are Grassmann variables. So basically, that thing goes away, and I get the sum over n of this integral plus terms of order theta squared, psi bar gamma 5 psi with the theta, plus stuff that's of order theta squared. In fact, I could do it by expanding that. I don't really need to go to this step. The only thing that will matter if I take a variation, if I do it at theta equals zero, then all the theta squared terms and higher will vanish. So the only one that can possibly contribute is this structure right here. And So now I have 0 is the variation of the effective action with respect to theta at theta equals 0. And now that's going to be the integral of d psi bar d psi of the stuff I got here, but with that term over there as well. So it's e to the minus 2i trace of this thing. And minus s of v minus the integral of psi bar gamma mu gamma 5 psi times d mu theta. So now I have an extra term that has the potential to help me, and I'm going to vary all that stuff with respect to theta, plus order theta squared terms here, but all at theta equals 0, so that's going to go away. And when you do it, we will get the path integral of e to the minus s of v times these operators, d mu of psi bar gamma mu gamma 5 psi minus twice I times the trace over this thing here without the theta, the sum, sum over n, this thing. So now there is indeed an extra term from the measure. But the problem, on the one hand, well, I mean, this is where the anomaly has got to come back, but it's a very problematic object. The sum over n of phi n dagger of x, the trace of this thing here, is going to be equal to phi n of x. Well, the trace will be over gamma 5, but by the completeness relation, I'm going to get delta of x minus x. So this is 0 times infinity. Now, whenever you have 0 times infinity, you have a chance of getting an answer that will help you. But this is, in fact, what we're faced with. So one has to somehow regulate this object to ask what kind of infinity we actually have here, what kind of 0. So how many boards are here? 3 or 2? Oh, 3, okay. So let's introduce.
Question, so
If
the sum doesn't converge, how are we justified in swapping, like doing all the things like swapping the order of integration and summation and then?
Well, we're not really. I mean, that you could raise that as a more detailed question. So what will justify it, presumably, is this step where we have some function of the eigenvalues divided by the square of a mass. And I'm going to choose this function such that it's unity when the argument is 0. And f at infinity is f prime at infinity is f double prime at infinity is equal to 0. In other words, it's smooth at infinity. It vanishes and all its derivatives vanish at infinity. So like an e to the minus x squared will fulfill this job, for example. But it doesn't have to be that function necessarily. So the argument, to get back to the question, would be when I introduce this, it's going to tame the nasty properties in this sum that allow me to carry out the manipulations I need to carry out. So the way I understand this thing, not only here, but further back in the process, like up here, it gives me a problem, for example. The way I understand this thing is I'll have the trace of phi n dagger gamma 5 phi n of x is going to equal the the trait is going to be understood as the limit as m goes to infinity of the trace of the sum over n of phi n dagger of x gamma 5 times this function of the eigenvalues times phi n of x. So when m goes to infinity, I've just introduced unity, so I'm departing a little bit from unity in doing that, and I am indeed assuming I can pull the limit in and out of here. In some sense, that's the assumption of the regulator. Well, what that means, if I use this completeness relation, d slash phi n is lambda n phi n, then this becomes the limit as m goes to infinity of the trace of the sum over n of phi n dagger gamma 5 f of d slash squared over m squared times phi n. So now what am I going to do? Well, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to point split. I'm going to understand this as yet another limit of the trace of the sum over n of phi n dagger of y gamma 5 d slash, a function of d slash squared over m squared times phi n of x. So far, that seems fairly benign. But now what can I do? Well, I can use these kinds of completeness relations to say that this sum in here, if I pull this around to the other side, since I'm taking a trace, I should be able to pull the operator around. And so then I've got the limit as m goes to infinity, as y goes to x, of the trace of gamma 5 times this function of d slash squared over m squared times delta of y minus x. And that can be written as the limit as m goes to infinity of the integral of the trace of gamma 5 times f of d slash plus ip slash divided by m squared, that's squared, times the integral, that's where this integral comes from, maybe I'll put it here, the integral of d4p over 2 pi to the fourth. Now what the heck did I do there? Well, to go to that other step, I've used the fact that delta of x is equal to the integral of d4p over 2 pi to the fourth times e to the I p dot x. So I write delta of y minus x like so. I have a y minus x in there. And then this d slash squared will act on that operator, effectively pulling the ip slash into the d slash. And so I end up with this integral here. Notice I've taken now the limit. Oops, this is y approaches x, sorry. I've taken now the limit back as y goes to x. So really what I've got here is e to the i p y minus x, but in the limit y goes to x, this thing goes away. So now we have that. And now I'm going to Taylor series f at x. This is quite an elaborate argument. Yeah.
In the argument of the function, should d slash still be there?
Yeah, because d slash on e to the I p dot x is like d slash plus I p e to the I p dot x, as long as I've got the sign right. Maybe I need a minus, I think, here. So it's because I'm using d mu of e to the I p dot x is equal to e to the I p dot x times I p plus IP mu plus d mu. This is anticipated acting not only on this, but on some test function elsewhere. Okay? So that's why it pulls into there. Maybe I should leave that up. So what I'm using basically is d mu of e to the minus I p dot x acting on some test function is e to the minus I, e to the plus I p dot x times d mu phi plus I p mu phi. And so this is equal to e to the I p dot x d mu plus I p mu acting on phi. That's what I'm doing to get this step. And I do it twice. I've got two d's. Okay, I think I've got room for one more part of the expression in here. We're about two-thirds of the way done this argument. So this is the limit as m goes to infinity of the integral of d4p over twice pi to the fourth times the trace of gamma 5 times the sum from n equals 0 to infinity of 1 over n factorial times d slash over m to the 2n times the nth derivative of f evaluated at p squared over m squared. When I take the Taylor series for, I guess, small d slash. So I imagine whatever d slash does, it's an operator and it will have that expansion. Now, can I rub off the top two boards? I don't want to get rid of this. I don't want to put this stuff in a place you can't see it. So I think what I'll have to do is push that up there, pull that down here, and switch these around. It doesn't actually help to have three boards if one of them obscures the other two. So what has to be the case, I can get rid of this, I think, because that's long enough ago. What has to be the case now is to evaluate this power series in the proper limit. And where was I? So,
sorry, bro.
Yeah.
So this seems like a very arbitrary regulator. I mean, we had delta of zero, that's like a volume. Why not take, you can write it as a integral in momentum space and then regulate it the same way we usually do by cutting out high momentum.
Well, you can try that, and it's messier, but in general, it leaves you with the same answer. So I'm showing you what Fujikawa did because this is the cleanest way, but you're quite right. There is some arbitrariness there. Let me get to the end of this thing and then we can critique it, okay? It's a valid point. So let's see. So this is equal to the limit as m goes to infinity of this same integral times the trace of gamma 5 m to the fourth times this sum to infinity of 1 over n factorial of d slash over m to the 2n times fn of p squared. What did I do to get that? Well, I let p mu go to m times p mu. So if I rescale p by a factor of m, then this introduces four powers of m, but the rest just stay the same. And now I can actually begin to do something. Now let's take the limit as m goes to infinity, and let's look at what this thing does. So the leading term in the series is n equals 0, and I've got the zeroth derivative, which is just the function itself. So the leading term in the series is the trace of gamma 5 times m to the fourth times f of p squared. So that's going to go to 0. And then the next term in the series will be the trace of gamma 5 d slash quantity squared times m squared times f 1 of p squared. That's going to go to 0 because there aren't enough gamma matrices to keep the trace alive. But then we're going to get something that is not 0. We're going to get 1 over 2 factorial times the trace of gamma 5 d slash to the fourth power times f double prime of p squared. So f1, of course, is just f prime. Plus more stuff. But more stuff will vanish as m goes to infinity. This term has a 1 over m to the fourth times an m to the fourth. So this will have a 1 over m squared, a 1 over m to the fourth, etc. So all the other terms die. These first two die because of trace rules. So there is one survivor, and that is it right there in this whole power series. Well, 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 well. So this is going to be 1 over, let's see, I've got 16 pi to the fourth times 4 pi, there's a 2 factorial, so I've got 32 pi to the fourth, and I've got 4 pi times the integral of p cubed dp times f double prime of p squared times, bracket, times the trace of 4 times d mu, d nu, d alpha, d beta with epsilon, well, with gamma 5, basically. So that trace, I'm going to simplify now. It's actually, it's not a 4. The trace simplifies to this with epsilon mu nu alpha beta. So this trace becomes this structure right here. If I've got it correct, I'm out by some strange factor of 2. Is that right? 16, 32. You got a 4 there. Yeah, the angular volume is not right. It's a four-dimensional volume, so it's not 4 pi, it's 2 pi squared, excuse me, you're right. It's 2 pi squared. I'm thinking of a 3D volume. Sorry, it's a 4D. So it's a 3-sphere, which is that. And that's 8 over So I get that, and then this works out to be 1 over 32 pi squared times epsilon mu nu alpha beta times the trace. Since these are all, I should put in this here, there's a trace over the gauge indices there, but this is just f mu nu, f alpha beta, and there is the anomaly. So this is how the derivation went with Fujikawa. I've always personally been a little bit suspicious of this. It sounds a bit like you need to know there's an answer to get so that you can get it. And you might argue, I guess, as was stated here, how do you know you can't choose some other regulator that will regulate this away? Well, when he proposed this, other people tried it and have used a variety of regulators. But the story that basically goes in the path integral is that if you try this with a variety of regulators and are careful about the measure, you cannot regulate the change in measure of the path integral without violating the symmetry of the theory and the limit the regulator goes away. So what is making this work, of course, is this term here. It's an m to the fourth divided by an m squared. And you pick up four powers, yeah.
You're 1 over 4 pi squared instead?
In this term, it's that for the non-abelian. At least that's what I'm getting. But when you put in the current, I think with the right normalization and go back to Euclidean space, you get that. Does that disagree with what I had yesterday or the day before? FF dual.
So what happened to that factor, right?
There's a pair of commutators here that give you the Fs, and this 2, what, it's, the question is what happens to that 2 pi squared. Oh, it's because this integral, when you actually do it, and integrate by parts, gives you another factor of a half, basically, if you use the definitions of the regulator. So there's a factor of 2 that comes in there that fixes it. Yeah. Sorry, left. Oh, how did I evaluate that integral? Let's see. It would be the integral of d, let's see, I've got p cubed f double, which should be d by dp of p squared f prime with a factor of, p cubed f prime, isn't it? And then minus 3 p squared times f prime, and then this will go to, so this is evaluated at 0 and infinity, and this is integrated again. So at 0, this vanishes, because p vanishes. At infinity, we're going to say this vanishes faster than that does, and then you have to integrate by parts again, and that's what gives you the other factors, I believe. That's right. You have to use the properties of the regulator, and you have to believe your regulator falls off fast enough to give you that, to give you a finite result.
But you don't need to put down some functional form by hand.
Sorry?
You don't need to like put in a function by hand.
Right? No. As long as it uses those properties, you're fine. So what we're basically saying here is that this thing is equal, well, I was trying to be lazy, I guess I'll just write it out. What we're saying is that this function, the sum over eigenfunctions with a gamma 5 in the middle, is equal to the trace of FF dual. Basically, that's what has to happen to get the anomaly. You've got the sum over phi n dagger of x, gamma 5, phi n of x is equal to 1 over 16 pi squared times the trace of f mu nu, f dual mu nu. So this is regulated. So again, this derivation, I've always been a little bit suspicious of it, to be honest with you, in the sense that if you didn't know there was an anomaly there, you might equally well argue I have to regulate that sum to zero. I don't think it's as airtight an argument as the diagram one is. The diagram one you cannot escape. But this one, if you wanted to escape, you could. Now, that might start a debate amongst particle physicists in the community. Anyway, here and there, I guess, yeah. Oh, because when I might have lost sight of it. Oh, all I've done is look at that, but did I rub out? Is it under here? I think I rubbed it. Oh, it's up there, right? So what I've done is I've looked at that trace up there, and through this long argument, that trace up there boils down to this. But that other piece is the d mu j mu 5, and the whole thing is 0. So this term is that term up there, and this term is that term up there. Okay? That's where that comes from. So, yeah. Well, yes, to the extent that the regulated measure gives you a term that's equivalent to a one-loop term and you don't get anything else. That's right. But how much of a proof this is depends in part on what you mean by a measure. So if I am to have full disclosure and true confessions, one thing that's always bothered me about the path integral aspect of quantum theory is nobody really knows what the measure is, except in highly idealized circumstances. Whereas I know what a Wick expansion is by brute force and what the diagrams are and the Green's functions, and it's awkward and messy, but at least I feel it's on more firm mathematical footing. A path integral is very intuitively appealing, but all the sins are hidden in the measure, right? We don't really know what the measure is. That's where we are right now. There are ways of treating it. We're not totally helpless, but anyway, that's maybe not the thrust of your question. Okay, so are we almost out now? So the non-abelian anomaly can be done by similar means. And there is a rather lengthy argument to go through that I have no hope of getting. Oh, I've got till 4:15. All right, so I'm not, all right, it's not 4. But it still is rather lengthy, so I'll sketch it out. Let me say one other thing about it. If I take the integral of both sides of this equation, this side is equal to n plus minus n minus, and this side is equal to the Pontryagin number. That's what this thing is right here. The integral of the trace of FF dual over x, e4x, is divided by 16 pi squared is the definition of the Pontryagin number. And this is, let me do n right minus f n left. This is number of right-handed fermions minus the number of left-handed fermions with zero eigenvalue, with zero eigenvalue. So in other words, this is one way of this thing here can be shown. I haven't demonstrated it here, but if you look at the eigenvalues of the Dirac operator, although you sum over all eigenfunctions, you can show for all the non-zero eigenvalues, they have to cancel each other, but the zero eigenvalues don't. And so if you break this up into left and right-handed pieces, the right-handed eigenstates of eigenvalue 0 contribute this many terms, and the left-handed eigenstates of eigenvalue 0 contribute that many terms with a minus. Yes. I thought you had a question.
Oh, thank you.
So you don't know how many are in that state, but what you can show, whatever the number is, if you just populate, so the way to think about this is, suppose I imagine I have a spectrum of states for the right-handed fermions, I have some spectrum of states for the left-handed fermions, and they're all populated in some way. So the question is, how many states have zero eigenvalue in the right? How many have zero eigenvalue in the left? If you tell me that number has to be equal to this integral. Or conversely, if you tell me your gauge field configuration, I will do that integral. I will get this integer. This has to be an integer. You can prove it mathematically. And that integer will be the difference between the number of modes right and left with zero eigenvalue. So this is called the Atiyah-Singer index theorem. After Michael Atiyah and Israel Singer. yeah.
So that contract number is also the second term.
That's right, yeah. So if you give me a gauge field that has vanishing Pontryagin number, you could do it, then what you're guaranteed is that left and right balance at the zero level and therefore balance everywhere. And your theory is balanced between left and right. If you give me a non-zero number, then you've got one extra left-handed mode compared to the right-handed, and no matter how you excite the theory, whatever you do to that theory, this cannot change. If you take your zero mode and excite it upward, something underneath is going to come and take its place because you could have positive and negative eigenvalues and they stretch over the whole spectrum. There are boundary conditions and so on for the operator, but basically this is the number of zero modes of the D slash operator. Number of zero modes of D slash, or maybe I should say 1 plus gamma 5 D slash, and this one here is 1 minus gamma 5 D slash. So if I project the D slash operator into the left sector, NL is the number of zero modes, whatever your gauge configuration. Remember, this D cares about what your gauge field is. So you tell me some gauge field configuration. In principle, you can solve for the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of this operator. And when you find the answer, there's going to be so many, for a given gauge field configuration, you're going to have so many eigenvalues for this that are zero, so many eigenvalues for that are zero, and the difference between them has to be that number. That's what the theorem tells. Okay, so I can probably say a little bit about the non-abelian anomaly. So for the non-abelian anomaly, I'll have, I'll have e to the minus gamma of VA is equal to the integral of d psi bar d psi, e to the minus the integral of d4x, of psi bar I d slash psi, where now d slash is equal to gamma mu d mu plus v mu plus gamma 5 a mu, as we did before, and v mu is equal to v mu a t a, and a mu is equal to a mu a times t a, and the t's obey these familiar Lie algebra commutators, where now I'm using IF. So likewise, you have the same property here. Psi bar prime is equal to e to the I alpha gamma 5 psi. Sorry, psi prime is that. Psi bar prime is psi bar e to the I alpha gamma 5. You maintain a plus sign when there's a gamma 5. But now alpha is alpha of xa times the non-abelian generator. And then you run through the same kind of argument. You find that the measure changes by d psi bar d psi times the determinant of C. And then you have to go through this whole exercise again with the regulator, which is a bit of a nuisance. Well, more than a bit of a nuisance, I suppose. How much can I say about this in the remaining few minutes? What you have now the regulator becomes more complicated because you have a variety of different possible gauge terms. And so what you end up getting, I'll just write down the answer here, you end up getting that the trace of phi n dagger gamma 5 ta phi n is equal to the limit of this thing here after doing the rescaling by p, you get this. And we actually now have a sum over different possible regulators. The regulator is now equal to the sum over j from 1 to k of cj of f of lambda n squared over mj squared, where the sum of these c's times m from j equals 1 to k to the nth power is 0, unless this exponent is 0, in which case the c's add to 1. And the reason why we need that is that now these t's, these d slashes, when you expand it out, have non-trivial properties with those t's, and there is a fair amount of larger calculation, which I've got on these sheets, but I can't possibly write down in the remaining time, but I can let Dan and Tibra have them. But to suffice it to say, when you work this out and the limit m goes to infinity, the same structure happens when you take the power series expansion. The lower order terms that are divergent in M vanish because the trace vanishes. The higher order ones vanish because they go like 1 over M squared. And the only survivor is the term that goes like the second derivative term that has the square of D. So you'll get D slash over M squared squared, and that cancels, yeah. Yes, all the m's go to infinity at the limit. Oh, that's supposed to say infinity.
The other thing is that is
there infinity, minus, sorry.
There. Is there a minus sign in the second transformation?
No, because if you take the dagger, you'll get a minus, but when you slide it through the gamma zero, it goes back to a plus. That's why it It's a double sign flip. So what happens is you'll get the same thing that we had before. And in other words, we'll get d mu j mu 5a is minus I over 16 pi squared epsilon alpha nu rho sigma times this awful trace we had of v mu nu v alpha nu v rho sigma plus 1/3 a alpha nu a rho sigma, and then plus the 8/3 term. It's not trivial to get this answer, but it does indeed work. A mu v nu rho, I can't even read what I've written. A mu, let's see, a, there's an AAV and an AVA, and then a VAA. And then there is finally 32 divided by 3 times 4 of these things. A alpha, a nu, a rho, a sigma. So when you, what you have to do is expand all this out, find the fourth order term, and then collect all the terms together that have the correct commutation properties. And it's a mess, but it gives you that. I do have details for those of you that have the ambition to work through that bit of effort. If you do it only with left-handed fields, then life becomes a little bit easier, and you recover the formulas that we had before. So what else can I say in the last couple of minutes?
What are VNA with two indices?
Sorry?
What is VNA with two indices mean?
Oh, this is the field strength. This is d mu, this is d rho v sigma minus d sigma v rho, and then I've got the commutator of v rho with V sigma, where the V's are defined like so with the T's. And likewise, similar for the A's. Yeah?
So is that determinant of C, are we missing a square? Or
it turns out in the non-abelian case, because I have, let me just see if I have missed them there. Yeah, there actually is a minus 2. So, thanks. Yeah. So when you do the right-handed and left-handed, it's a bit easier because you've got 1 minus gamma 5s hiding in there, and they annihilate a lot of terms. So if you use just left-handed, then you're going to get that d mu of delta gamma delta a mu a will be, by definition, the covariant divergence of the left-handed current, and that works out to be minus I over 24 pi squared d mu of epsilon mu nu alpha beta times the trace of a nu d alpha a beta plus a nu a alpha a beta with a factor of 2 and with an I, with a minus I, because we're Euclidean. So the logic is the same. Put in this regulator and then expand it as a power series, and there's only one term that is finite and non-vanishing. But the actual computational details differ from case to case and are a bit tedious. Yes?
Sorry, what happens for the axial or the vector case? Do we have the Jacobian vanishes?
Yeah, the Jacobian doesn't contribute there. It vanishes because in the vector case there's no gamma 5. So this term cancels that term. And so you get e to the I theta and e to the minus I theta, and they cancel each other, so they don't do anything. So that's the origin of the path integral case. And as I said, I'm happy to let you see the calculational details if you want, and you want to work through them. They're a bit tedious, but they're similar to what I did on those two boards up there. It's not completely trivial, but it's within grasp. The non-abelian case is considerably messier, but I can't help that. Anything else? I don't think there's anything I had to say that's of other burning significance. Oh, I guess one other thing is this I, there is one something else I should point out. This I is due to the fact that we're in Euclidean space. And so what it means is the anomaly will contribute to the imaginary part of the effective action and not to the real part of the effective action. So that is basically connected with the fact that real representations do not have an anomaly. So anomalies affect the phase of the functional integral, but they don't affect its overall magnitude. They modify its phase. And that really is about all I had to say. Okay? That's good. So tomorrow we're back at 9 a.m., right? In the usual place, right? And then Thursday we're back here, right? At the unusual time and place. Okay, see you.